demon fight? Brunner asked. Wolfgar gave a laugh. Such a simple life I left behind, he lamented.
So Entreri's been by here, and Jarlaxle is gone and won't return, said Catti Bree. You said he had a secret way into Gondelgrim, but that is lost to us, I would expect.
I got me a map, Brunner said. We'll get there.
But not straight away, Drizzt said, looking at the woman who had once been his wife. Longsaddle, Catti Bree agreed.
Perhaps we should use our new names, Regis suggested, and find an alias for Drizzt.
No, Brunner insisted and stamped his boot. Carried that name too long already.
Someone's hunting.
Then let him come, said the dwarf, and he was no longer whispering. Me name's King Brunner to any who are asking, and King Brunner to any who ain't. How much can we trust this Beniago? Wolfgar asked.
And when Drizzt gave him a non-committal look, the giant barbarian stood up, began re-rolling his bedroll and packing up the wagon. They set off soon after, heading east across the fields. Barely into the journey, Brunner began to sing, a mournful song of loss in a grandeur and era that could not be again, the Delzoon song of Gontalgrim. There was no moon this night and no clouds, and a million stars twinkled in the clear skies above and the gray swirl of a distant galaxy. Clouds in one of the overlapping celestial spheres, Regis named them, striped the sky directly above. It was one of those nights when the heavens seemed to reach down to the earth itself, lifting up the soul and the imagination, much as Drizzt had known in the quiet dark atop Brunner's climb on Kelvin's cairn. It was a night where the rogue drow felt tiny and yet grand, a part of something ancient, eternal, and as vast as his imagination, and as warm as the love among these five friends surrounding him in the wagon, even Guinevar, for he could not bring himself to dismiss her back to her astral home. Indeed, on a night such as this, in a night such as this, it seemed to Drizzt as if Guinevar's home had come to them. Yes, it was good to be home, Drizzt decided. And this, the rolling wagon bouncing across the farmlands east of Luskin, was home. Because home wasn't a place, oh no, but a bond, and one that had never seemed stronger. Part 2. Crossing Paths and Crossing Swords. I am haunted by the expression on Brunner's face, and by the words of Catti Bree. The burden you carry blurs your judgment, she told me without reservation. As you see yourself, you hope to find in others, in orcs and goblins even. She alone said this. But Brunner's expression and wholehearted nod certainly agreed with Catti Bree's assessment. I wanted to argue, but found I could not. I wanted to scream against them both, to tell them that fate is not predetermined by nature, that a reasoning being could escape the determination of heredity, that intellect could overwhelm instinct. I wanted to tell them that I had escaped. And so, in that roundabout, reasoning-turned admission, Catti Bree's description of my burden ultimately rang true to me. And so, were I not bound by my own experiences, and the uncertainty that has followed me every step out of Menzo Baranzon, even these many decades later, my expression would likely have matched Brunner's own. Was the Treaty of Garam's Gorge a mistake? To this day I still do not know, but I find now, in light of this discussion, that my ambiguous stance relies more on the averted suffering to the dwarves and elves and humans of the Silver Marches, and less on the benefit to the orcs. For in my heart, I suspect that Brunner is right. and that Caddybree's newfound understanding of orc nature is confirmed by the goings-on in the Silver Marches. The Kingdom of Many Arrows holds as an entity, so Brunner claims, but the peace it promotes is a sham. And perhaps, I must admit, that peace only facilitates the orc raiders and allows them more freedom than they would find if Many Arrows did not exist. Still, with all the revelations and epiphanies, it hurts all of this, and the apparent solution seems a chasm too far for me to jump. Brunner is ready to march to Mithril Hall, rouse the dwarves and raise an army, and with that force wage open war on the Kingdom of Many Arrows. Brunner is determined to begin a war. So determined is he that he will put aside the suffering, the death, the disease, the utter misery that such a conflict will wreak on the land, so that, as he puts it, he might right the wrong he caused that century ago. I cannot start a war. Even if I embraced what Caddybree has claimed, even if I believed that her every word came from the mouth of Mialiki herself, I cannot start a war. I will not, I say, and I fear, nor will I allow Brunner to do so. Even if his words about the nature of orcs are true, and likely they are, then the current situation still, in my view, remains better than the open conflict he so desires. Perhaps I am bound to caution because of my burden of personal experience, but Brunner is bound by guilt to try to correct what he sees as his chance at redemption. Is that any less a burden? Likely it is more so. He will run headlong into misery for himself, his legacy, and for all the goodly folk of the Silver Marches. That is my fear, and as such, as a friend, I must stop him if I can. I can only wince at the possibilities illuminated by this course, for I have never seen Brunner more determined, more sure of his steps. So much so, but should I try to dissuade him, I fear we might come to blows. As indeed I fear my road back to Mithril Hall. My last visit was not pleasant, and not one I often consider, for it pains me to realize that I, a ranger, have worked openly against dwarves and elves for the sake of orcs, for the sake of the peace, I tell myself. But in the end, that dodge can only hold true if Caddybree's admonition, if